Committee for March 22, 2007 will come to order. And we're going to open an information meeting on business taxation and a public hearing on House Bill 2480, House Bill 2839, and House Bill 2964. Let me just begin by saying that the purpose of our meeting today is to start discussing the conceptual backgrounds involved in business taxation and in the issue of the corporate minimum tax specifically. I think, Chris, you could probably give us a quick summary of these bills, which are all pretty similar to each other, and then let's launch directly into our presentation.
Okay. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, there's a one sheet that you should have in front of you called Bills Changing the Corporation Minimum Tax, and there are actually five bills that have been introduced this session that affect the corporate minimum tax. Three of them has been open for a public hearing. But that sheet just highlights some of the similarities and differences across the five bills. The status of them, the 2217 is in House Education. The other four are in House Revenue. And House Bill 3506 is on the agenda for tomorrow afternoon. All of the bills would affect the minimum tax for C corporations. And one of the bills, 2964, would also affect the S corporation minimum tax. Basically, there are different. Each of the bills has a different number of steps and different sizes of steps for the minimum tax. The three of the bills have a minimum tax that ranges from $25 to $5,000 or $10,000, and then one goes from $100 to $7,500. One bill, 2964, the dollar amounts are blank, but at the top end for corporations that would have Oregon sales in excess of $5 million. The minimum tax is 0.025% of the gross receipts, very similar to what was in 2031 for a period. Of the five bills, two of them specify the direction for the funds that would come from the corporate minimum tax. 2217 would direct it to a newly created corporate minimum tax fund, and then there are uses for that fund. House Bill 2480 would direct all of the revenue from the minimum tax to a school improvement fund. And three of the bills would start in January of 2007, and two would start in 2008.
Thank you. And I see that Senator Avakian is here. Senator, would you like to be heard on your bill?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just very briefly, because I know you've got a number of bills, and not just on my bill, but just in general, I'm very pleased to see the committee taking up the issue. So thank you for doing that. And I think you actually have several different, Brad Avakian, State Senator, District 17. You've got, I think, several versions here that can be great vehicles for starting good reform in the state, and especially in this regard where we have such an imbalance between the contributions of corporations to no fault of their own. These are because of changes from the legislature over the last 20 years. But that has shifted the burden to mostly middle-class taxpayers in this state. So I see great necessity in bringing these forward. One of the bills has Representative Rosenbaum's and my name on it, so I felt it was only appropriate that I at least come in here and lend my support in a couple words. The bill that has my name on it is 2839. Representative Rosenbaum and I are co-sponsoring the bill together. The best estimate is that that raises about $120 million per biennium for the state. The notion behind the way that we crafted this was to place the greatest amount of burden on corporations that bring in $20 million per more in revenues for the state and try and make it a little easier for those businesses that are on the smaller end of gross revenues. And with that, I will finish unless the committee has any questions.
Thank you, Senator. I don't see any burning questions. I think when Representative Rosenbaum appears, she may want to speak on these on this bill as well, but we appreciate your testimony.
You bet. Thank you.
Thank you very much. You want to introduce our panel?
Oh, sure. Mr. Chair, Member of Committee, we have two speakers today. There is Mike Leachman from the Oregon Center of Public Policy and Tony Ruffalo from Portland State University, and they're here to provide some discussion about the corporate minimum tax.
Great. Who wants to go first?
I will, if you don't mind.
Certainly.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, it's a pleasure to be here. I'm sorry I didn't have time to prepare any written comments. As I understand it, my task is to give you sort of a background on the basis for corporate taxation and to...
Yes, and our custom is that people first announce their names.
Oh, sorry. Tony Ruffalo. I'm a professor at Portland State University.
Thank you very much. Go ahead.
Okay, thank you. What I thought I'd do is start with the basic concept of the corporate income tax. And if you think about what income is on the personal side, in general, most of us pay taxes based upon wages, dividends, interest, and so on. However, people who are self-employed get to deduct their expenses of generating their income. And that's the underlying principle between the for the federal corporate income tax. The basic idea there is that revenue received is not a fair measure of income, that you have to take into account the cost of generating that revenue. And what you observe is that there are substantial differences between corporations in terms of their sales versus their net income or profit that is typically subject to the federal tax. When we get to the state level, it becomes even more complicated because many corporations have operations across states, and the objective of the corporate income tax has been to tax the income that was generated within a particular state. And so you come to the question of what's known as apportionment, which is determining how much of the income that a corporation generates is appropriately taxable by any particular state. Now, for a long time, Oregon used what's known as the three-factor formula. Basically, the three-factor formula takes into account the corporation's sales in that state versus other sales, their employment in that state versus other states, and their property in that state versus other states. And the way the formula worked was basically a simple averaging of it. So, for example, if 10% of your sales were in Oregon and 20% of your employment and 30% of your property, then the average of those would be 20%, and the state would tax 20% of the profits that you earn nationally. In the recent past, it's switched more towards the sales formula, and under the sales formula and the numbers that I just gave, the tax would be on 10% of that corporation's sales. And so basically the distribution or apportionment formula has been changed. In general, the use of income or profit has been supported on the basis of equity, and that is basically, again, the ability to pay concept that we think of for the individual income tax, which is that the higher your income, the more your ability to pay, and therefore the higher your tax burden should be. The problem with the corporate income tax from that perspective, there are a number of them, but one of the biggest ones has been the volatility of the profits tax. And that's basically because when we calculate net income or profit for a corporation, we're looking at the difference between revenue and revenue and expenses. And small differences in revenue or expenses can lead to big differences in profits. And so we tend to see a fair amount of volatility, particularly over the business cycle, in terms of the taxes that are generated. Now, as I understand it, you're looking at some of the other potential bases. One of those bases in particular is what's known as gross receipts, or just net sales of the corporation. Gross receipts taxes have a long history in public finance, and most of the analysis concludes that they are not very desirable taxes. In general, a gross receipts tax runs into a problem in terms of what's known as cascading features, and that is if you tax each transaction, for example, if a company purchases inputs that they'll assemble into an output, the inputs get taxed when they're purchased, and then the output gets taxed when it's sold. And if you go through many cycles, you can get a substantial increase in the final tax burden as compared to the nominal rate at which the tax is levied. Most of the European countries had transactions-based taxes in the past and have converted them into what are known as value-added taxes. And basically, the way the value-added tax works is that each stage of production is given a credit for any taxes that were paid on inputs into that stage of the production process, so that the total tax never exceeds the nominal rate. However, the rates that you then have to apply on value-added taxes tend to be substantially higher than the rates that you get on turnover taxes. The issue in terms of taxing based on turnover or sales versus net income is that there are wide variations in the ratio of net income to sales. So, for example, grocers will tell you that they have a large amount of sales and turnover relative to their profit margin, whereas other types of activities you find a much different relationship between sales and profits. The question that we basically run into then in terms of the use of sales alone as a factor is this question of the cascading and net income effect, and then the distribution and the differences in distribution of tax burden amongst corporations based upon the ratio of sales to net income. And with that as sort of background, I'm primarily here to answer your questions. I would be happy to go into more detail about the history or bases of these taxes or answer any other specific questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have some specific questions now? If you will, I'd like you to stay at the podium so that during the other presentation there may be questions for both of you. But go ahead, Representative Broom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think your testimony is outstanding. I you're a professor, so you did that off the top of your head, and I wish you had prepared testimony like a lot of the. Anyways, so writing notes. At which point, my question to you is, at which point does a corporate minimum in effect become a gross receipts tax?
I don't know that it's a question of a point. It's a question of what your base is likely to be. Again, you can have a corporate minimum tax based upon corporate income or corporate profits, or you can have a corporate minimum tax based upon corporate sales. Those are two very different approaches to the tax base, and it runs into the basic distinctions that I was making earlier.
Thank you very much. Other questions? Michael.
Chairman Barnhart, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Mike Leachman. I'm a senior policy analyst at the Oregon Center for Public Policy. Thank you for inviting me today. It's a privilege to be here. I wanted to first just tell you that the Oregon Center for Public Policy is a nonprofit public policy research and education institute. Our primary concern is with the opportunities that are available to Oregonians. We get interested in tax and budget issues because they are so important. The public structures that we provide for Oregonians to get ahead are crucial. And so talking about what's happened with corporate income taxes over the last generation and their decline is central to what our mission really is all about. So I just wanted to start a little bit today talking to you about some of what our research has found about what's happened with corporate income taxes over the last generation. And I'll start with the share of all Oregon income taxes paid by corporations here. That share has declined precipitously since the 1970s. So this is as a share of all income taxes. So the other group here obviously is personal income taxpayers. And in the peak of the corporate share was in the 1973-75 biennium when corporations were paying 18.5% of our income taxes. The average over the course of the 70s was about 15%. Their share was about 15%. Now, this chart includes the recent changes that you've made to the 2007 corporate kicker. So you see a little bit of a jump up in the next biennium, but then we're back down after that to a little in the 11-13 biennium, according to the March forecast. Based on data in the March forecast, we're down to a little under 6% of Oregon income taxes paid by corporations. Now, you see the same sort of trend if you look at it a little bit differently, and instead of using income taxes as the the base of comparison here, you can look at the economy. So corporate tax revenues as a share of the economy have declined steadily. This just breaks out the average, in an average biennium, what was the corporate share, what were corporate tax revenues as a share of the Oregon's state economy. And it's declined, and current projections have it continuing to decline as we start the upcoming decade.
Representative Berger.
I hate to interrupt you, but because
sure.
I know you're moving, but I have a question on the slide before with sure. Corporations pay a smaller share of Oregon income tax than they used to. Have you looked at comparable data for other states? Are we odd in this graph? I mean, our dependence on income tax weighs in here. And Oregon income tax is what we're talking about, but have you got comparable data from other states as far through that same time period, whether other states are having less and less dependence on corporate as a move? Could you speak to that at all? And it's not in your work plan here, but can you speak to it?
Sure. Chairman Barnhart, Representative Berger. This isn't in general a national the decline in corporate state corporate income taxes is a national issue, and so what I've shown here for Oregon is not especially different from what you'd see in many states.
Thank you. I don't want to belabor it. I just wanted. That's sort of been mine.
Representative Butler. Thank you. Mr. Leishman, I wonder if I might ask also, as a kind of pivot from that question, have corporate income tax rates changed in the state of Oregon during this period of time? My recollection is they've always been the same basic 6.6% tax rate during that period. But have they changed any in this process?
Chairman Barnhart, Representative Butler, yes, in 1987 we reduced the corporate income tax rate from 7.5% to 6.6.
Excuse me, what year was that?
1987.
And you had a comment on that?
Representative Barnhart, Representative Butler. One other thing to take into account is that the amount of taxation is based upon a number of things. I don't know the numbers, but for example, corporations are not the only form of business, and so there have been changes in the structures. And again, if you wanted to look at the issue of the rate at which the corporations are being taxed, you might want to take that into account. The other thing has been the change in the apportionment formula. The shift from the three-factor to the sales has affected some of the larger corporations, and therefore the tax collections that are generated by those.
And Chairman Barnhart, Representative Butler, that's correct. I agree, and do expect to address some of those issues.
Thank you. Go ahead.
The decline in state corporate income taxes does not appear to be a result of a decline in corporate profits over the last generation. This shows estimated Oregon corporate profits. This is using the same methodology that the Office of Economic Analysis uses as part of their forecast estimates to determine what they think corporate income tax revenues are going to be in upcoming biennia. We use the same method that they use to come up with this estimate of Oregon corporate profits going back to 1969. And it shows estimated corporate profits in Oregon shooting up in just early in this decade quite substantially up to over $20 billion currently from down around $8 billion at the beginning of the decade. Now, there's an important caveat here, and that is that the ordinary business profits of S corporations are included in this corporate profits data. We have estimated that the large spike there that you see from 2001 to 2006, we have data to be able to show that the increase from 2001 to 2005, we estimate about 8% of that growth in profits is due to growth in S corporation profits. This just looks at the same data a different way. Here we're looking at corporate profits as a share of personal income. So while corporate profit or corporate income tax revenues compared to personal income tax revenues are down, at corporate profits as a share of personal income are at least as high as they were in the 1970s. It's not just for to provide some perspective, it's not just corporate income taxes that where the burden of taxation has shifted away from business entities to households. This just looks at Oregon property taxes and the share that's paid by businesses in the state, and you'll see that in 1989, businesses were paying about half of all Oregon property taxes. In the first half of the 90s, that share declined sharply. And what was going on here was that we saw rapid population growth after Measure 5 lowered property taxes for both businesses and households. But we saw such rapid population growth that home prices were going up rapidly and much more quickly than business property. And then in 1996 or 97, I'm sorry, I don't remember exactly right now, we implemented Measure 50, and that essentially, because it shifted the base of property taxes away from the actual property's value to its assessed value, and then capped the growth of that assessed value, it locked in the low share that businesses had come to be paying. So as a result, businesses are still paying only about 40% of Oregon's property taxes. And in general, if you take a look at...
Before we go on, if we could go back to that earlier one just for a moment. You have a gap, looks like a nine-year gap between 79 and 89. Is that because those are just repetitive numbers?
Representative Barnhart, no, it's it indicates that I didn't have that data for those years.
Thank you. And then... You've also shown, if I'm looking at the graph correctly, the last several years, there's a slow decline in the relationship in the percentage of total property taxes that are paid by businesses. Is that something which is going to even out, or is that something that you expect to continue so that businesses pay a smaller and smaller portion, even with Measure 50 in effect, or what do you expect that line to do?
Representative Barnhart, that's a good question and one that I haven't examined. I would suspect that it's not I don't believe it to be indicative of a long-term decline in the share that businesses will pay.
Okay, so Measure 50 really has sort of fixed these relationships. Without Measure 50, would you have expected the trend that we see with the implementation of Measure 5? Continue? I mean, the line that you've got there is a pretty good demonstration of the effect of Measure 5 on the relationship between business property tax and homeowner property tax as Measure 5 was phased in over the first several years of the 90s. And I'm wondering if that would have continued if it hadn't been for Measure 50.
Representative Barnhart, I don't believe it would have. I think that because Measure 5 lowered property taxes for both businesses and households, the shift in the share paid by businesses was more an effect of what was happening to home values relative to business values at that time. I think cyclically we would have seen, if we hadn't had Measure 50 come along, business property values start to come back up relative to home values, and that the share of business of the share of property taxes paid by businesses would have also come back up. But we locked in; we just happened to lock in at a moment of time when businesses were paying a low share of Oregon's property taxes.
Thank you. This is off of our topic for today, but it is a relationship that I hadn't thought about before. Yes, please,
Chair Barnhart. Just one other comment. I don't know the magnitude of the effect. But you should also recognize that during the 1990s, there were large numbers of property tax incentives, for example, the Strategic Investment Program, various enterprise zones, and so on, that also gave tax breaks to businesses. So I'm not sure that all of what you're seeing there is associated with Measure 5. Some of it is directly policy that was oriented towards economic development.
Great. Thank you very much.
Yeah, Representative Butler. Thank you, if I may, Mr. Chair. And now, Mike, I'm going to go back to a couple of different slides immediately before. I'm just trying to draw some relationship. The slide of the decline in corporate income taxes, corporate profits are up substantially. Looking at that, at $2 million, and let's go back one more right there. In 1977, it appeared corporate profits in Oregon were $2 million. Then it took until about 89, 12 years, to go to $4 million. And then it looks like it took until about 94 to come to $8 million, doubling again. But then when I look at $10 million in about 2003 to $20 million in 2006, a tremendous increase. Now, when I look at that tremendous increase, is there any relationship to the fact that more we had more business offerings starting in the late 90s or mid to late 90s with regard to LLCs and LLMs, folks that wanted to take advantage of perhaps the to try and move away from the tort problems that we've got in Oregon, the tort limits and those kinds of things. Is there any indication that there's been a greater move to C corporations and other limited liability entities in Oregon over other states?
Chair Barnhart, Representative Butler. I'm not aware of Oregon having seen an especially rapid growth in S corporations or limited liability companies relative to other states. You know, that's a national trend that Oregon is more or less in line with, as far as I can tell.
Okay. Now, thank you very much. Follow-up, if I may.
Yes, please.
Now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to compare, and that's not going to be very easy for you to do on your overhead there, but I'm going to compare that chart right there with the very next chart. As I see this rather significant, and I'd say rather significant, I'm going to guess if you took the delta on that, it's enormous, the delta of the increase in these corporate profits, which are up substantially. And I recognize that there's C corporation as well as S corporation in that. When I look at the next chart, I see that actually is coming down. The personal income is coming down in comparison. So it must be that corporate or that individual profits are increasing very, very significantly as corporate income is if it's declining, while the prior graph is growing straight up, then there's a pretty good indication that individual income, income taxes are, and I guess this isn't income taxes, this is just individual income, if I read that correctly, those must be up at a much greater proportion than what the corporate profits are up.
Chair Barnhart, Representative Butler, I think that what you see here in this slide that shows just the raw numbers estimate of corporate profits, that very sharp spike up until 2006, followed by what the Office of Economic Analysis projects will happen in the future, you see kind of leveling off in corporate profits, which I think is to be expected after such a rapid increase in corporate profits over the last several years. And on this slide, that leveling off of corporate profits is getting matched up with personal income that's continuing to increase. And so as a result of that, you see the dip back down according to the forecasts.
Okay. And Mr. Chair, I still am looking at that very significant increase in individual in personal income at a time when corporate profits are increasing at an enormous over a period that, you know, doubling when it took 12 to 15 years to double them from 2 million to 4 million, and then from 4 million to 8, we compress that period. But then when you start looking at 10 to 20, and that happening just in a very short period of time, I got to believe that that may have something to do with the S corporations and LLCs in part. But then I'm wondering, when you talk about personal income in the slide that you have up now, does that include dividends from C and S corporations as well?
Chair Barnhart, Representative Butler, yes, the income data for personal income would include dividend income. I should make clear, and correct me if I'm going off track from your question, but the growth that we're seeing here is the growth in corporate profits as a share of personal income. So this is not indicating a growth in personal income. It's indicating a growth in corporate profits as a share of personal income. So corporate profits are growing much more rapidly than personal income during this last few years.
And let me make sure I understand the label, because I don't know whether it'll help with Representative Butler's question or not, but are you talking about the portion of income that individuals get that are the result of corporate profits, or are you talking about something else? It may simply be that I misunderstand the label.
Representative Barnhart, what is measured here as personal income is the total personal income, the total income received by individuals in the state. So that the base of this slide is just personal income. It's not corp. Now it does include the income from that it includes business income in your personal income, right? But we're comparing here to corporate profits, the best data that we have, and just showing the share.
So this is not including corporate profits as a part of personal income, but you're contrasting them to personal income.
Correct.
Okay, that's
correct.
The reason I'm wondering about this word share. You're actually contrasting two different items. One is personal income, and the other is corporate profits. Is that right,
Representative Barnhart? That is true.
Now, some of the money the corporations get, of course, are paid out in dividends and so forth, and that would end up in personal income. So, in some senses, you may be counting some of these profits twice. But these are actually different numbers. They're coming from a different issue. We're not including in my income the profits that the General Motors shares I might own happen to be a relation to General Motors, only the part of the dividends that they paid to me.
Representative Barnhart, that's correct unless you received capital gains for the...
Unless I sold the shares.
Correct.
Right, thank you.
Mr. Chair, I just need to make sure that I understand. S corporation profits that are included in that first slide are not in any way contrasted. They're not treated as personal income in the second slide. And then the second question I have was that you mentioned, Mike, you mentioned mm-hmm. capital gains. Capital gains is not in the definition of personal income, but you've included it in the definition here?
Chairman Barnhart, Representative Butler. I misspoke. You're correct that capital gains income is not included in the personal income data. It's also, and on your first question, the personal income that's used here as the base would be including some income individuals receive from S corps. So, this is our attempt to try to give a rough idea of what we're seeing here based on the data that we have available. I agree that there are some inconsistencies there.
It shouldn't be some, Mr. Chair. I think it should be all.
A lot.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if it's an S corporation, if S corporations are reflected in the first slide, then all of the distribution of the S corporations are in the second slide, because by law that's taxable to the shareholders in the year that it's earned. So I'm assuming that that's when you mean some of it, it means all of it.
Well, let's ask the more specific question, and that is, in the definition of income that you're using, is the income from S corporations included in that, whether it's distributed or not? Or do you know?
Representative Barnhart, I'd have to go back and look at the data. I don't believe that. I believe that only S corporation income that's distributed to shareholders is included in the personal income.
Okay, yeah. So a portion of the S corporation income would be considered in that other number, but all of it would be considered in this number. Is that right?
Representative Barnhart, I'm sorry.
Let me try again. A portion of the S corporation income would be considered in the personal income number, but all of it would be considered in the corporate profits number.
Representative Barnhart, the S corporation profits data that's included in the corporate profits data includes what's defined as ordinary business profits, and we've actually been working on this question with the Bureau of Economic Analysis nationally to get an answer to whether the S corporation profits that are not distributed are included in the corporate profits data. I can't answer that.
That's a more complicated question than I realized I had. I'm sorry. I apologize. Representative Butler.
Mr. Chair, I don't think that I appreciate where he's coming from, and we probably have gone afield of this, but yeah. There, I don't believe that there is a tracking method or mechanism today available that anyone is actually, any agency is actually tracking the distribution of dividends versus the actual taxability of those dividends from S corporation. In other words, if it's reported on your first schedule and all of it then is reported, whether it's distributed or not, because the actual calculation of the amounts distributed is in a separate form or a separate page on the 1120S and is not tracked that I'm aware of by any federal agency. So if it's income in the one place, it's income in the other, whether it was distributed or not. So I think we're there, right? It's just interesting to compare the relationship and the ratio of the two as you see one extremely high. I've got a sneaking suspicion what's happening is that, and I think Chris has given us data that we're seeing more and more very, very significant S corporations doing business in the state of Oregon, where previously those were multinational corporations. Those folks have decided to do business and pay the tax one time.
Representative Barnhart, Representative Butler, thank you for your concerns. I would say that we have as I mentioned, estimated that only about 8% of the growth in corporate profits over that 2001 to 2005 period, and this is, it's very difficult to nail this down exactly, but it's in the we estimate it's in the range of 8% is due to S corporation profits, a factor, but it appears that the corporate profit increase is being driven by C corporate profits.
Thank you. And I think the next slide that you are about to show us may actually be the point you were trying to make. Why don't you go ahead with that?
Well, I wanted to just make I talked about what's happened with Oregon corporate income taxes and Oregon property taxes. If you look generally at Oregon taxes on business, we've seen a pretty substantial decline since the 1980s in the share of the economy, or business taxes as a share of the economy, down to about half of what they were in the 1980s. This is based on a study out of Utah, the Utah State Tax Commission, and it's also in line with other studies that have shown Oregon having low business taxes today. The Council on State Taxation has produced a series of reports comparing states on business taxes and has ranked Oregon near the bottom for business taxes. As of the latest report, we were fourth lowest business taxes in the nation. I'll stop and just mention there since we were talking about the impact of S-corporations and LLCs, well, it's clear that those changes have had an impact on corporate tax revenues. The cost studies, the Council on State Taxation studies, initially were including their estimates of pass-through income on the household income side, and they got some better data and moved it over to the business side. And when they made that switch, Oregon went from having the lowest business taxes as a share of the private sector economy in the country to the fourth lowest. So while there is, I think it's clear that pass-through companies have had an impact, our business taxes appear to be low, whether or not you take that factor into account.
Mr. Chair?
Excuse me. Representative Burns.
Just a quick question. Can I follow on what the variables are in the tax that this is evaluating? Is it just the corporate minimum and the income tax, or does it also include capital gains and potentially other fees and whatnot that happen at all levels? I assume it's just state income and corporate minimums, correct?
Chair Barnhart, Representative Bruhn. Yes, the Utah State Tax Commission attempted to assess all business taxes as best they could. So they included not just corporate income taxes, but also property taxes paid by business, unemployment insurance taxes, worker compensation taxes, and as much information that you
get. Franchise fees and a variety of local taxes as well.
Some local taxes were not included in this study, although the cost study, the Council on State Taxation study, did make a greater effort to gather information on local business taxes.
Okay. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Is that responsive? Thank you.
The factors involved in the decline, we've talked a little bit about the impact of pass-through companies. Nationally, the estimates are that it could account for a quarter to a third of the impact on state corporate income taxes. I'm not sure the impact in Oregon has been that great, in part because we have combined reporting here, and so to the extent that corporations are forming LLC subsidiaries to avoid corporate income taxes, Oregon is capturing much of that income. But at any rate, I'm going to focus on a couple of the other factors. One is the increase in corporate tax sheltering. It's been pretty widely it's been pretty well researched and pretty well we have some solid evidence, although we don't know the exact amount of tax shelters. We have good indications that we have seen a substantial growth in tax sheltering. The Multi-State Tax Commission estimated that Oregon lost between $66 and $94 million in 2001 alone to tax sheltering. The IRS has estimated federal revenue losses in the tens of billions of dollars annually. And the part of what's maybe happening here is that the IRS audit rate is down substantially for larger corporations. A recent New York Times article interviewed dozens of IRS agents, most off the record, and who argued over and over that the agency was allowing corporations to pay a fraction of what the agents really thought that they owed. Another factor, and
excuse me just a moment.
Yeah.
When you say abusive, what you're talking about is non-compliance, aren't you? You're not talking about actions of the legislature to add tax credits or make some other change in the tax law.
Representative Barnhart, that's correct. I'm talking about complicated schemes to avoid taxation regardless of the rules.
And just to follow up on that, if those schemes were actually evaluated by the taxing authorities, or IRS or the Department of Revenue, they would be disallowed, and the people claiming them would have to pay the tax. Is that what that word abusive means?
Representative Barnhart, that's correct. That's in the And that's generally what's meant by this, and in the multi-state tax commission report that included an estimate for Oregon in particular, that was how they defined it.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Yeah, Representative Butler.
We'll get to see the outcome of that in Senate Bill 39,
yes,
which has passed the Senate. It's on its way over now. A very delicate balance was struck on the whole issue of tax shelters and tax compliance, and I'm anxious to see that.
We're all looking forward to that to that bill. Thank you, Representative Butler.
Another factor, as has been mentioned, is the switch in our apportionment our apportionment formula. So this is the formula that we use to decide how much profits of a multi-state corporation should be are taxable in Oregon. We've changed from a formula that as Dr. Ruffalo mentioned, a formula that took it to looked at three factors, property, payroll, and sales, to one that only uses sales. And the size of the tax break that this has given to certain Oregon corporations is substantial. We estimated, for example, Nike's savings from single sales alone in 2006 to be over $16 million. The numbers of what we estimated if we were still using the double weighted sales formula we had in place until 2003, or the equal weighted formula that we had in place prior to 1991, are there on the chart for you to see. We also have more corporate income tax breaks on the books. These are just primarily tax credits that corporations can access. This is just the percent of all tax credits, corporate tax credits, that are on the books now, corporate income tax credits that have been created since 1980. It's about 84%, and more than half created since 1995.
Excuse me, is that by value or in some other way?
That's simply the number of tax credits.
Thank you.
And finally, the corporate kicker has been more valuable to corporations than it has been to personal. The corporate kicker has been more valuable to corporations than the personal income tax kicker has been to personal income taxpayers.
We have to add to that label. Okay.
Thank you. And the. So this includes the effect of the recent changes that we just made in the corporate kicker for 2007. But even with that change, the share of the income tax cut due to the kicker since its inception, the kickers since their inception in 1979, has been more than double for corporations than it has been for personal income taxpayers. Let me turn to the minimum tax. As I think all of you probably know, the Oregon's $10 corporate minimum tax was set at $10 in 1931. It was originally set at $25 in 1929. And the Great Depression hit, and the legislature lowered it to $10. If you adjusted for inflation, the $25 1929 corporate minimum tax to $2007, today's corporate minimum tax would be $300, and the 1931 $10 minimum tax would be it's the equivalent of $135 in today's dollars. Now, the share of corporations that pay the minimum has been increasing, and as of the latest data that we have for the 2004 tax year, 67% of Oregon C corporations pay the $10 minimum. That's up from its low point of about 58% in 1994. Now, I think partly why the $10 minimum has generated some substantial concern and even outrage among Oregonians is if you make some simple comparisons to the taxes that we expect of others, the $10 minimum looks very small. This looks at the income taxes that we could expect that a family of four at the poverty line, that is a little over $20,000 in annual income, would pay in 2006. It was over $300, $319 last year, while most corporations are paying the 10. Many of Oregon's corporations have given substantial increases in executive compensation to their top executives. This just shows two companies that we know paid the $10 minimum in 2002, Portland General Electric and Louisiana Pacific, and their total amount that they gave in raises in 2002 compared to 2001 to their top five executives. You can see that the raises far exceed the corporate minimum that they paid to Oregon. The pay raises, by the way, don't include stock options. I'm going to skip that slide in the interest of time and move on to what should be the structure of an updated minimum tax.
Mr. Chair, yeah. Representative Butler. Thank you. I just want to make sure that on the slide which we just saw, that there's no misunderstanding. You said that the raises that they received had very little relationship to the corporate minimum tax that they paid. Are you saying that these two corporations, Portland General Electric and Louisiana Pacific, both only paid $10?
Chair Barnhart, Representative Butler, yes, that's correct. In 2002, we know that both those companies paid $10.
Thank you.
It's the so-called Enron tax.
Representative Barnhart, yes, that's correct. And we know about Louisiana Pacific because when they were leaving Oregon, there was some press attention, and the corporate executive, the CEO, told the newspapers that they had only paid $10 in corporate income taxes in 2002.
Well, Mr. Chair, it would be very tough to pack up and haul your operation out of the state of Oregon when you're only paying $10, unless it's going to be cheaper to operate somewhere else.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a point we're beginning to understand, isn't it, Representative? Please.
So let me just offer the remainder of my presentation as part of the brainstorming that I appreciate that you're doing in figuring out how to best structure an updated corporate minimum. One option, as I know you're well aware, is to use Oregon sales as the base. A couple of issues that to consider there. Oregon sales may, to some extent, serve as a proxy for how much corporations are receiving in benefits from the public structures that we have in place, our court system, our schools, our universities, the Oregon Health Plan, et cetera. There are some issues, as I know you know, with using Oregon sales as a base that you need to be considering. The first I know you've heard a lot about recently, and that is that some corporations are high volume and low profit, and so if you use Oregon sales as a base, then the minimum tax is a share of their profits may be relatively high. In addition to that, some corporations, because of the single sales apportionment formula, some corporations that have plenty of profits have low Oregon sales. I misspoke. It's not because of the single sales factor directly, but it is because some companies may not be booking their sales in Oregon, even if they have a lot of nationwide sales. So, we're not sure what you can buy from Intel in Oregon. We've asked them if we went out to your headquarters and what can we purchase from you in Oregon. We're not sure how much of Intel's sales are booked to Oregon or Oregon are considered Oregon sales. This just is informational. It shows, this is straight from Legislative Revenue Office data, and it shows the share of corporations that are paying the minimum tax as the the amount of Oregon sales increases, the share that pay the minimum tax declines. You can see that even for corporations with over $20 million in Oregon sales, 43% were paying the minimum tax in 2004. Here are some possible solutions to using Oregon sales as the base. One is to use nationwide sales rather than Oregon sales, and this helps to overcome the distortion that I was just talking about. In addition to that, we could just increase the number of the steps. Cliffs happen. We also do a lot of work at Oregon Center for Public Policy with public benefits issues, and so we understand very much the impact of these sorts of steps in the structure of our programs, and that would be true for a minimum tax that had some steps. There, if you have steps, you're going to have cliffs. We can increase the number of steps and minimize the impact of the cliffs. And the other thing here is just that if we structure it based on Oregon sales, that the minimum tax should really capture the full range of Oregon corporations. There are some corporations operating here that are very large and have extraordinarily high profits relative to most of the companies that are operating here. So if we structure a minimum tax that has a number of steps, that the steps should take into account the full range, that there are companies who are much, much larger, and so the minimum should be proportional to their size. If we used the taxable income as a base, some issues there. It helps deal with some of the problems that we've talked about with using Oregon sales as a base. One issue with using Oregon taxable income is that Oregon taxable income doesn't necessarily equal Oregon profits. There's a number of ways that a profitable company can end up paying the minimum tax through the single sales apportionment formula, through tax sheltering, by taking advantage of carry forward losses, so that a profitable company can end up with no taxable income. And it also raises the question about what you do with companies who have used tax credits to reach the minimum. Possible solutions to those issues would be possibly setting up a alternative minimum tax structure that was based on the three-factor formula, so that those companies who were getting to the minimum who have very little taxable income in Oregon because of single sales, we could make sure that the minimum that they paid was more in line with what their profits would be if we used a three-factor formula to determine what their minimum would be. We could base the minimum on before carry-forward losses. About 25% of corporations that pay the minimum now are paying it because they've taken advantage of their carrying forward losses from previous years to the future. I'm not sure that if you talk to the people on the street about corporations' ability to do that, whether we ought to base the minimum on their profits after they've been able to carry forward losses from previous years or not. Also, we could, for corporations that are, there are at least three corporations in 2004 reached the minimum very large corporations reached the minimum using tax credits. At least three corporations with Oregon taxable income over $25 million nevertheless paid the minimum, and that's primarily probably because of tax credits. should we have essentially a means test for our tax credits? Did we intend for corporations that are already paying low amounts in taxes to use the tax credit to get all the way down to zero? We could set the minimum as a share of the tax credits that a company took advantage of to reach the minimum.
Representative Butler.
Mike, do we have some idea of what kind of corporations those were? Were they corporations that were manufacturing corporations, natural resource? Any idea? Three corporations with $25 million of Oregon net profit paying zero. They've got to have some tax credits that are, I'm going to guess they have to be natural resource-based corporations. I'm looking for some place that we offer $25 million worth of tax credits.
Chair Barnhart, Representative Butler, we don't know from the data that's publicly available what industry those companies are in, unfortunately.
And the credits wouldn't be $25 million. They'd be the tax on $25 million, but those would be very, very hefty. I'm going to guess that they're things probably like child care centers and other kinds of community outreach kinds of things that make the community a more livable place, but I'm still struggling with that. Those are hefty tax credits.
Chair Barnhart, Representative Butler, they are indeed. It may well be a combination of tax credits.
Mm-hmm.
The research and development tax credit, the pollution control tax credit are two that come to mind.
Sure.
Finally, I just wanted to mention that we could also, as a way to deal with the tax sheltering that may be getting some corporations to $10, we could fund more corporate revenue enforcement and require the Department of Revenue to produce a biennial report about tax sheltering in the state so that we can get a better grip on what the impact has been here in Oregon. I'm just going to close by returning to a couple of points. One is just what should the minimum be? And I'll return you to this slide that showed what the $10 would be adjusted for inflation. So the 1931 minimum adjusted for inflation and the 1929 minimum adjusted for inflation. In 1929, when the legislature first set up the minimum, they felt it was rational and reasonable to expect a corporation in recognition of the benefits that it receives from our public structures to pay the equivalent of $300. In the midst of the Depression, they still felt it was reasonable to pay for corporations to pay the equivalent of $135. Now, while I think it seems reasonable to expect corporations to pay the minimum be at that kind of a level, it's also true that most of where the political energy behind people's concern about the minimum tax is coming from is not the minimum that's being paid by small companies. It's the low taxes that are being paid by very large profitable corporations. And so while we think that it does make sense to have to raise the minimum, it also is important to have the corporate minimum be structured so that those very large, very profitable corporations are paying a more reasonable amount. I think if you looked at $5,000, $10,000, even $50,000 as a share of the profits of some of our companies, Nike, Intel, others, it's not going to be very hard to show that that's still a very, very small share of their profits. Thank you very much. I appreciate your patience and time.
Thank you. Representative Butler.
Thank you very much. I've got a question for Dr. Ruffalo. I think, Tony, I've heard you say before that something with regard to Oregon's sales-weighted tax, that it cast it, and I know that the Office of Economic Analysis and Office of Tax has posed this, that it cast a broader net, and that might be part of the reason that our profits our corporate profits are up as much as they are in terms of the collections of the numbers of dollars. What's your opinion of moving to a single sales weighted formula versus the more complex three-part or the averaging of the three, or a sales weighted versus a single sales.
Chair Barnhart, Representative Butler, I can give you a couple of different answers to that. Basically,
one hopes.
The first question is, what are you trying to tax? If you are really looking at the issue of income and profits that a corporation generates and trying to apportion how those profits are generated, then I think the three-factor formula is the closest you're going to get to identifying all of the different activities that the corporation engages in the state. On the other hand, the argument for the sales factor is that you want to encourage export-oriented firms. Basically, what you're doing there is an economic development incentive rather than a taxation incentive. As a public finance specialist, I would argue for the three-factor formula that, you know, if you are specifically engaged in things like economic development, that there are probably better ways of approaching that than through specific types of tax incentives.
Could you expand on that last sentence just a little bit? There are better ways of accomplishing the business of getting traded sector businesses into your state.
Chair Barnhart, no, I said economic development.
I'm sorry.
That,
you can see already I misheard.
Yeah, no, I said that it's an economic development incentive, and the incentive is intended to attract export-oriented businesses. But we have many, many policies that are oriented towards economic development, and I won't go into my evaluation of how effective some of them are, but basically I think what you want to do is separate out the question of public finance versus the question of incentives for economic development. In general, if you're doing that, you know, we should take that into account in terms of direct expenditures, for example, rather than hiding it through tax incentives.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, a portion of my question...
Please, Representative Butler.
Thank you. A portion of my question dealt with actually casting, I think we said at one time, it cast a broader net, and actually was attributed to this rather significant increase from $495 million at close of session, last session, to what's now approximating $800 million in collections. I had understood that had come in part from casting this broader net and actually capturing companies that had sales that had no physical presence in the state of Oregon.
Chair Barnhart, Representative Butler, I can't directly answer that question. My understanding of the corporate tax was that if they had no physical presence in Oregon, that the sales factor would not force them to pay Oregon corporate income taxes. Now, I may be incorrect on that, but in general, Nexus requires that the corporation have a presence in Oregon before Oregon can tax them.
So General Motors would pay no tax in Oregon?
Oh, no, they have presence here. Mm-hmm. The key issue is Nexus, and it's a federal concept having to do with the interstate commerce issues, if I understand that correctly. Mm-hmm. That the state has the power to tax businesses that have Nexus with the state. And then you figure out how to do it, how to apportion it after that.
Right. I mean, it's certainly, Chair Barnhart, it's certainly possible that corporations that have nexus in the state and were previously paying very little in the way of corporate profits tax because they had very little employment and property in the state would pay more under the sales formula. Again, I have no specific information on that. It's certainly a possibility.
Yes, please.
Chair Barnhart, Representative Butler, I agree with that, and it's clearly true that some corporations did see their corporate income taxes increase as a result of the move to single sales. However, the overall impact of the move to single sales was a revenue loss.
Others? Yeah, Representative Reed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm especially grateful that there's a professor here. It takes me back to school a little bit. And I want to ask sort of an academic question. There have been references to this in a variety of different forms throughout both of your presentations, and thank you for those. We think about two sort of primary bases, both income and sales, and I've heard sort of both the upsides and downsides on both of those. But I'd like to hear in general from both of you maybe what do you think is is a better method, a better way to approximate a corporation's ability to pay and to align it with their activities in the state. Just there are lots of other things that you both talked about, but if you could kind of give me a sense of what if you had to pick one, where you would go with that, please.
Chair Barnhart, Representative Reed. Basically, what we typically think of is when we talk about sales taxes, those are taxes typically on consumption. And the expectation generally is that the consumer is going to end up being bearing a large part of the incidence of those taxes. Whereas when we think of income taxes, we're thinking more in terms of ability to pay. So to the extent that we're moving the corporate tax from an income base to more of a sales base, I would expect that you're also shifting the distribution of the tax burden and a variety of other things. In general, as I mentioned earlier, you know, the sort of gross receipts turnover tax is a very poor form of a sales tax. But basically, it is a form of sales tax. I mean, the value-added tax is basically evaluated as a sales tax. The gross receipts tax, you know, for example, Washington's gross receipts tax is typically talked about as a sales tax. There are differences that you then generate in terms of who you're taxing, why you're taxing, and what the incidence is. I would come down back to that basic distinction that an income tax is based on ability to pay, whereas a sales tax is simply based upon level of consumption.
Representative Barnhart, Representative Reed. I think that there are ways to make either of them work, and we try to offer some options to do that. I think that we expect corporations to pay some income taxes that are in some semblance comparable to the benefits that they receive having the privilege to operate in Oregon. I think it's possible to do that in either way. I think we would probably come down in terms of the minimum tax on the side of using taxable income as long as we had the fixes in place that I mentioned.
Thank you.
Chair Barnhart, Representative Reed, if I could just add a little bit. The other types of things that we would tend to look at there would be, as I mentioned at the beginning of my presentation, income taxes tend to be more volatile, and the corporate income tax is much more volatile. If you move more towards a sales tax, then you create a lot more stability. In general, the expectation is it would probably grow less rapidly over time as well. I mean, there are a number of other characteristics that you would want to look at there. There are differences in administrative costs, potentials for evasion, and so on that would also enter into the discussion.
Great. Thanks.
Yes, Representative Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is more a question of history that leads me to a point I'd like to make. In 1931, this $10 minimum was put into place. I'm trying to remember when the personal income tax came to Oregon, and I think was it about that same time?
No, it was later.
Was it later? We were early on that.
29.
Was it 29?
29.
I'm correct. I stand corrected.
And I guess my point is this: when that was put in there, was a corporate income tax put in at the same time? It appears not. It appears this was the corporate income tax or the corporate tax. I don't know. What I'm getting at is I'm very bothered with this discussion of raising the corporate income tax without looking at that as some way of balancing some unknown unfairness or articulated unfairness, when really we should be opening the door to what is the appropriate level of business taxation and then deciding how you get there in a fair way, not starting with we want to raise this piece of it and not knowing where we're going in the end. I think my point is made.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Representative Butler has another question, but does anyone else have one while he's getting back? Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I don't know which of you asked this question of, but we've had some pretty good panels of folks to come forward and talk to us in the past about certain aspects of Oregon corporation taxes. And I'm looking for the you know, we talk about 50 methods of corporate taxation for 50 states, and we're still looking for the one true, perfect method of landing on. But my question, and I don't know, I'll let you divide this up however you'd like. What would be the downside of replicating Washington's B&O tax in Oregon in lieu of all corporate income taxes and all corporate credits? Isn't it a value-added tax in effect for corporations?
Chair Barnhart, Representative Butler. No, the Washington gross receipts tax, which I believe is what you're referring to, is basically a cascading tax. It's levied at a relatively low level, and it's levied differently for different for different sectors and so on. But basically, the public finance conclusion is that that's a very poor taxation base. Again, what it does is it favors large vertically integrated corporations over small decentralized corporations. It tends to penalize certain types of transactions and gives incentives for these activities to be brought in-house rather than purchased. And because of the distortions that it creates, it has to be levied at a very low rate. Again, the cumulative effect can be quite large because of the cascading nature. But in general, public finance specialists almost unanimously argue that it's a very poor tax.
So they've moved away from it being a true value-added tax by cascading it down, in effect.
Chair Barnhart, Representative Barnhart, they have never, to my knowledge, done it as a value-added tax. A value-added tax has to explicitly give you credit for taxes that are paid on the inputs that you purchase. And my recollection is that they have never approached it from that direction. It has always been basically a gross receipts tax.
Thank you. I apologize.
Thank you. Yes, please.
Chair Barnhart, Representative Butler, on the positive side, the taxes that businesses pay in Washington as a share of their private sector economy is substantially higher than it is in Oregon, where we're at the bottom of the pack. So if you look at it from the perspective of should corporations be paying more of the costs of the benefits that they receive, then moving to that sort of a tax gets you closer there, and I think people, defenders of that system in Washington, would argue that that helps to pay for their schools and their court system, et cetera, and that comes back to businesses in a number of important ways.
Representative Butler.
Thank you, if I may, Mr. Chair. Thank you very much. And assuming that we could come to a conclusion where we would have an absolute minimum corporate tax that would accomplish something with regard to the footprint of what corporations have in Oregon, what would be wrong with having, without regard to the substantial book of corporate tax credits and those kinds of things that we have, what would be wrong with having something similar to what the Canadian National Revenue System has, and that is whatever portion of the national income tax that you have, then you will pay some particular percentage of that amount to the state of Oregon. So rather than going through a whole prolonged series of recalculations, that we just use the federal tax return for the corporation and then some percentage of that off the bottom, including a minimum tax in that process. Give me the pluses and minuses. Again, I'm looking for the downside, the upside of an administration of a huge system.
Chair Barnhart, Representative Butler, I think basically you're saying go back to the way it used to be. I mean, the original intent of the, I believe, the Oregon income tax, again, referring to the three-factor formula pre-1991, was precisely to do that, to take the federal tax liability and to determine then what percentage of those profits would be attributable to activities in Oregon and use the three-factor formula to determine that percentage. I think, as you have indicated, a lot of the discussion that we're having here is really associated with activities of past legislative sessions where various incentives have been given to corporations to do things that the legislature wanted them to do in exchange for reduced taxes. And I think it would probably make more sense if you were really looking at raising the corporate taxes to reevaluate the desirability of many of those incentives rather than to try to go and add on an additional tax or an additional set of potential distortions in terms of the way the revenue is generated.
Mr. Chair, if I could just say that.
Just a moment. Let's hear from.
In response to that, I think that also addresses the same thing we took care of in 2003 when we came with a hodgepodge of the BERS that had many years of special tweaks and valves and whistles that have been put into it. So I can see how that's happened over a series of years. Excuse me.
So tax reform and pension reform are related in that way.
In much the same way.
Interesting argument. Yes, please.
Chair Barnhart, Representative Butler. I would just add that federal corporate income tax revenues are down substantially, just as state corporate income tax revenues are down. Partly the federal corporate income tax system is being affected by some of the same factors that we've talked about for Oregon and other states, increased tax sheltering, increased tax breaks, for instance, the increase in pass-through companies. So if we went to the sort of system that you were talking about, we would still be in some ways confronting the same sorts of issues, and Congress would be deciding how to deal with them, not the state legislature.
Mr. Chair, with the exception that Oregon could reset its rate based upon some predetermined factor every year and have that in statute, so that if Congress took actions, much like our Reconnect, if Congress took actions to significantly change whatever that was, that Oregon would automatically connect to a higher percentage of that amount. Thus, there would be no effect to Oregon other than just recalculating the new percentage on the next year's tax return.
Thank you, Representative. Other questions for this panel? Gentlemen, we really appreciate your coming today. This is extremely useful. I hope you don't mind if occasionally we may pick your brain again.
Chair Barnhart, that would be fine. I'd be happy to participate.
Thank you.
Chair Barnhart, thank you, and thanks to the full committee.
We appreciate it very, very much. And I see that Representative Rosenbaum is waiting for her turn to talk, I assume to talk about her bill, but we'll see.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, I really just wanted to see how you all looked for a matter. And you look great.
Yeah, we were.
Well, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I want to thank you for holding the hearing today on these bills, one of which is the one that I co-sponsored with Senator Avakian, who I know testified earlier. And I am by no means as astute or qualified as the witnesses that you've just been hearing from, who I think did an excellent job. And I guess my only quibble with their presentation was the Oregon Center for Public Policy entitling Time to Raise the Corporate Minimum Tax. I would say it's long past time to raise the corporate minimum tax. And I have to tell you that just reminiscing, I think this was one of the first bills I ever introduced when I was first serving along with Representative Butler and others back in 1999. And I'm somewhat incredulous, actually, that we're still holding hearings on this topic today. And I think, you know, that feeling is shared by a lot of average Oregonians. And that's really the thing that I wanted to testify to you about, because I think aside from all the economic niceties of this, there really is a big problem, which is I think that the $10 corporate minimum tax has almost become an icon for what is wrong with the Oregon tax system in terms of basic fairness. And, you know, I think it's now a well-publicized fact that we have two-thirds of Oregon corporations paying this amount. That includes corporations like Louisiana Pacific or PGE, formerly Enron. And so when you go out to town halls, you know, and people ask you about that, it's very, very hard to explain to people who in many cases feel like they're shouldering at least their share and often more than they would like to be paying of their taxes, and yet they hear this fact and it just seems plain wrong to them. You heard testimony about the shift that has taken place since the 1970s when corporations were paying 18% of Oregon's income taxes, and now it's six, and I think that's a fact that really is significant too. So as I said, I really think that this is a matter of balance, that our tax revenues now are out of balance, and it is impacting everything else that we're trying to do here. I think that, you know, all the services that people rely on, whether it's education or troopers or low-income senior health care, those things are affected by this too. I think that it is really important that this be the session that we address this. I think we can do it. I think that there was an earlier attempt that obviously had some flaws that were well and capably pointed out by members of this committee, but I think that there are ways around those. I think it would do a great deal to restore public confidence in what we're trying to do here and be a major achievement of this committee. These bills take many different approaches to the problem, but I don't really care about which one we pursue. I just think it's much more important that we get it done. And so I would be happy to work with all of you and anybody else that's interested in pitching in and finally finding a solution. So we won't be back here in 2009 again talking about this. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Rosenbaum. Are there questions for Representative Rosenbaum? Yes, Representative Witt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Not so much a question, probably, as a comment. Representative Rosenbaum mentioned a Fortune 500 company that was headquartered here in Oregon and left our state. And I had the occasion to chat at some length one evening with the former CEO of that company, and the company left Oregon not because of their tax rate, which was, as the statistics have shown here today, very low in comparison to the rest of the United States. But more because the company was not the beneficiary of the kinds of services that they thought was important, not only for them to be able to conduct their business, but also for them to be able to attract and retain a workforce. And so, highly suggestive, Mr. Chairman. I think that cheapest is not always best, and we need to give some serious consideration as to what is important for us to be able to compete in a global marketplace. And in this instance, the global marketplace doesn't necessarily mean that it's international competition. We lost a very big company to another state here in the United States because they were able to beat us at our own game in terms of in this instance, our inability to retain a company that was already here.
Thank you, Representative Witt. Thank you, Representative Rosenbaum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
We have, at this point, two additional witnesses who have signed up to be heard today, and so I'd like to call forward Dana Hepper and Marcia Kelly, if they're here.
Chair Barnard and members of the committee, my name is Marcia Kelly, and I'm with the American Association of University Women of Oregon Public Policy Committee. Dana stepped out for a meeting with Representative Kotek, so she's hoping that she will get here before you finish. She asked me to tell you that.
Thank you.
I probably can't add too much more to the presentation that you've seen from the Center, the Oregon Center for Public Policy, talking about the effect that the consumer price index would have on the $10 minimum up to $135. The American Association of University Women is an organization of associate degree or higher graduates of colleges and universities, men and women. We are 2,000 strong in Oregon, and for at least the last four sessions we've been educating our members and working on taxation issues. The Oregon corporate minimum tax to our members seems very low. And so we would appreciate anything that you can do in an equitable way to make it a bigger pot for everyone to fund things that we care about. And I'll just touch on one today, and that's the early childhood education, where we're currently only funding 50% of those qualified for Head Start. That means that we leave 50% of the kids who are from the most disadvantaged families at the door for kindergarten without the skills that they need to be able to succeed. And so that sort of thing is what you need to take into consideration when you're doing taxation policy. We actually would really prefer to have you look at a full tax reform, because we think that it's well due time. I will only tell you that the discussion that we had about being a very tax-friendly state for business is true. You will probably hear different from the business community. The Tax Foundation's 2007 State Business Tax Climate Index ranks Oregon as 10th for being friendly for business. And lest you think the Tax Foundation is one of those liberal think tanks, their board of directors includes Bill Archer from PricewaterhouseCoopers and Joseph Luby from Exile Mobile Corporation, not other people, the Sterling Foundation, and only one academic that I could find on the board. I will digress from what I was going to say for AUW and put on the hat that I wear as an elected official being on a property tax. And I think if you go back to the slide where it showed the property tax in Oregon and businesses' portion of the property tax, if you will remember, when we voted in ballot measure 5 in 1990, general governments were capped at a total of $10 for all governments, and that went into immediate effect. The schools or the education system was capped at $5, but it was ratcheted down over a five-year period of time, and so I think that that's what that gradual decline indicates. And if the education system would have been capped immediately at that $5, it would have gone there and then just automatically sunk. So I thought that I would just offer that explanation, because I didn't think I heard it in the explanation as you were talking about that before.
Well, thank you. I have to say that was what I was trying to ask. I didn't do it very well, but I appreciate your explanation.
And I don't have statistics, but I'm pretty sure that that's the rate was what it would have been. And that's one of the reasons why AUW thinks that we need to really do look at tax reform, because ballot measure 5 flip-flopped the schools onto the state funding, and then we had other ballot measures that have changed the way that we need fund things in Oregon because of the votes of the people, and we haven't looked at the way we receive revenue. So with that, I will close.
Thank you. Please, Dana.
Chair Barnhart, members of the committee, thanks so much for giving me the time to testify today on an issue Sanford Children members have been supportive of and anxious to see worked on for a couple of sessions now at least. I'm Dana Hepper. I'm the statewide advocacy coordinator with Stand for Children. Just want to quickly make the statement. I've turned in written testimony, so I won't read it, but quickly make the statement that updating and revising the corporate minimum tax, we just think, is good public policy and is pretty fair. When you think about the way that we tax corporations, we look at their profits, and they pay taxes on their profits. So essentially, they write off any of the earnings that they have that are spent on their normal costs for operating a business. Of course, for families, we operate taxation in a much different way. For families, there are a few write-offs. You can write off the interest to your mortgage, but not the entire cost of your mortgage. There's a write-off, you know, to help pay for the cost of your children, but you can't write off the entire cost of raising your children. So there are some partial write-offs, but certainly nothing to the point that businesses have. We can't write off all of the costs for the normal operating expenses of our lives, although sometimes it feels like that would be nice. Corporations are obligated by their shareholders to take maximum advantage of all of the relevant tax breaks afforded to them by Oregon law. and we have no judgment around that. That's what they're required by their shareholders to do. It's fine. At the same time, the corporate minimum tax is just one way in which we ask corporations who are benefiting from these tax breaks and our public infrastructure to invest in the broad public good, just like working Oregonians do when they pay their taxes. What they pay should be reasonable and fair, and what they pay should make a meaningful investment in our toward the public good and in our society. And that's all. I wish I had the silver bullet solution and which bill you should pass and what it should look like, but I think there are others that are much more informed and could give you a better answer to those questions.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone else who's traveled some distance to talk to us today who will not be able to come back tomorrow to present? Tomorrow we're going to be considering the same three bills as today and also add one additional bill that hadn't reached its in time for posting for today but is in the committee now. We're also going to consider a bill on the inheritance tax, so we can start a conversation on that. I wanted to ask the committee, we have 7 minutes or so, if you'd like to have a bit of a conversation about what we've heard so far. Representative Butler.
Mr. Chair, this has been an excellent and a very eye-opening presentation. I particularly appreciate the information of the indexing, and Dana brought up a subject that what families can and can't do in relationship to what's taxable and what ain't. I'm going to tell you straight out that if we still had the $600 personal exemption credit from the 30s, that would be worth nearly $10,000 today. Mm-hmm. And so for each of my five youngsters, I would have never paid a dollar of Oregon income tax for many, many years in my professional life if I'd have been able to have had that indexed up. So some very interesting kinds of things, and I don't know, given an opportunity to vote today, I'd certainly take a look at some changes, and this is long overdue for us to be examining the corporate minimum tax, and I think we've received some excellent ideas today.
Thank you, Representative Butler. Representative Gelser.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to thank you for holding this hearing today and for the presenters that came forward, and I look forward to continuing the discussion. I agree with Representative Butler that this is a discussion that is long overdue for the needs of our state, and wanted to acknowledge and appreciate the business community for committing in their agenda early on to addressing this issue as well. So I'm pleased that we'll be moving forward with the cooperation of the business community.
Thank you. Further comments? I just wanted to add that I'm very intrigued by some of the ideas that were presented today as well. I know that these bills that we're looking at all seem to, I think they're all based on the idea that we're going to tax corporations on the basis of their sales. And some of the issues that were raised in the presentations today, the high volume, low profit business issue and the difficulty capturing income from high profits companies that have few Oregon sales were two that were mentioned that seemed to move in opposite directions from each other. One of them may overtax some very, very active businesses and may undertax other very active businesses. And then another suggestion was made that went by very quickly, and I just wanted to comment on it just very briefly, and that is the idea of what amounts to some kind of an alternate minimum tax for businesses, and lest we confuse that with the federal alternate minimum tax that seems to be running away with itself. This would be, and I should refer you to the second to the last slide presented by Mr. Leachman, in which he talked about an alternate minimum tax that might be based on the three-factor formula rather than the single-factor formula. A minimum tax that would be that would disallow carry forward, or taxes that would be based on net income before taking tax credits, or maybe some specific deductions as possibilities. Very similar to the way the alternate minimum tax works for theoretically high income individuals in the federal tax system. And that may be an alternate way. I mean, just thinking about that as an alternate way of getting at this business of taxing
companies based on their income rather than on their sales with the disability that that has. And as we proceed, I would hope that at least part of our conversation is on that. And I'm going to ask staff to do a little bit of an analysis so we can figure out what some of those effects might be. And what I have in mind sort of generally is it would be a tax based on a much lower rate than the current corporate rate, but would tend to capture at least some tax from those corporations that take advantage of the tax breaks we have in our existing system. Does anybody have any comment about that thought at this stage? I know it's very early, but...
It's a big elephant, Mr.
It is a huge elephant, I recognize. Is there, yes, Representative Witt.
Just a comment, Mr. Chairman, that I'd be interested, and I suspect this is some of the information that you're going to ask staff to look into, but I'd be interested in knowing what other states have structured their tax code in this manner, and maybe if it was possible to hear from some representatives of those states what their experience has been.
Now that would be useful as well. The idea really behind what I'm suggesting is that would deal with one of the major objections of that I've heard from many people in the business community, and that is that corporate taxes ought to be on profitable businesses. So we'd be talking about simply a different way of taxing businesses that are actually making money, and then with some kind of a minimum tax that's related to bringing the existing minimum tax up to date. Thank you, Representative Butler.
Thank you, and two things, Mr. Chair. In that process, I think it's really important that we remember that these corporations that we're talking about do provide, and particularly when we get to the public traded sectors, do provide some of the very, very excellent employment opportunities that we enjoy in Oregon. And the second thing, I would not be true to the folks in my district and the contacts which I've had over the past 7 or 8 years relative to the taxation of natural resource-based industries. We must remember in this process that natural resource-based industries, number one, sell at wholesale and buy at retail. They are price takers, not price makers. I wish we could sell our timber and our sugar beets any price that we would like to set. Unfortunately, the market dictates all of those kinds of things, but when we go to buy our fuel and our fertilizer or to pay those harvesters and timbermen to help us in that regard, we pay absolutely retail prices for those things. So my hope is that we will be sensitive to those folks who are in the natural resource-based industries.
Thank you, Representative. I think that a simple response to that is that these are among the businesses that are high volume, low profit.
Exactly.
And I appreciate that. Is there anything else for today? If not, we'll see you all tomorrow, hopefully at 1 o'clock. And with that, having exhausted our agenda, the Revenue Committee is adjourned.